This episode is sponsored by OHM Concessions. OHM is an award-winning St. Louis, Missouri-based concessionaire with over 20 years of operational excellence in the airport food industry. From quick serve to quick casual to bars to cafes, OHM brings its expertise in all categories, operating a variety of leading brands such as Chick-fil-A, Dunkin' Donuts, The Bracket Room, Good Stuff Eatery, and pizza. OHM is also the operator of two restaurant concepts by renowned chef Wolfgang Puck, The Kitchen by Wolfgang Puck and Wolfgang Puck Pizza. Learn more about their exceptional operations in each of their 12 airports by going to ohmgroup.com. OHM, outstanding hospitality management. This is episode 39 and the first in a recurring series titled Ones to Watch and Thus the Cool New Music. Each month, I will be featuring emerging up-and-coming members of commercial teams across North America. So for the first in this series, I chat with David Shaw of Indianapolis International Airport. Only less than 3 years into his time at IND, and actually even less than 3 years into his time in the airport industry, Dave's already experienced a great deal jumping into the thick of a program overhaul at the airport. So here is my conversation with David Shaw. So I'm here with David Shaw, the Director of Concessions and Air Service for Indianapolis International Airport. Dave, thanks for the time to take and speak with me.
Thank you, Ramon.
So let me just say that you are the first person we're actually featuring in a recurring series titled Ones to Watch. You're a very young, 3 years into this industry, right? I believe it's 3 years, isn't it?
Almost three. Well, about two and a half, yes.
Well, we'll round you up, 3 years.
Perfect.
And already you've gone through a program overhaul and a tendering, and now you're right into development. So I'm sure this is a really truly exciting period for you, and we're certainly going to get into that part in a bit. But let's start off with a bit of background, a little bit about you. What brought you into the airport industry?
Well, it's kind of a strange story, actually. I'll tell the short version of it. My entire life and career, I've been in the producing and managing event venues. So whether it be concert venues or state fairgrounds or racetracks, that's kind of all that I'd ever done. And people that are in that industry know the demands of your time, the stress involved with, you know, having to make huge choices constantly, just the work that you bring home, all that kind of stuff. That tends to weigh heavily on family life and on personal life. And growing up in that industry, I got very used and accustomed to missing out on a lot of things, whether it be weddings or funerals or graduations or mm-hmm. birthdays or whatnot. And when those kinds of things started to affect my family more so, I have a 5-year-old and a 9-year-old. My wife and I kind of decided, you know what, I need to get out of that industry. And I had started in 1991. So, I quietly started to look around and like a lot of people had a, you know, below average profile on LinkedIn posted, and I decided to update it a little bit, and then started to get some calls and put them off. I wasn't totally interested in what those opportunities were, and a gentleman named Chris Gomez out of Chicago contacted me. He did a keyword search and saw the word concessions, and that was one of my core competencies over 25 years of event management, was concessions and catering operations. And Chris had asked if I would ever consider joining the airport here in Indy. And I was like, well, no, I've never thought about it. And, you know, what do you mean? There's other people that work at airports other than the people that, you know, fly and greet yep. and serve sandwiches and work at a bar and sell a t-shirt. Well, yeah, clearly there are. So one thing led to another. And this has turned out to be just a wonderful, fantastic opportunity. But that's the short version of my non-traditional way of landing in this industry, no pun intended.
So are you saying that maybe there's a lot more stability and predictability in some ways in our industry now, the airport industry, versus maybe where you had previously come from?
I mean, there absolutely is, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in this industry with only a couple of years under my belt. But from what I've seen and worked, you know, really hard and learned a lot in this industry over the past 2.5-ish years, yes, there absolutely is. You know, the event industry, public assembly facility industry as a whole is extremely dependent upon the industry and industry that comes and goes. I mean, if you are a general manager at a professional sports team and that professional sports team has three bad seasons, I mean, it's going to affect everything. It's going to affect your budgets. It's going to affect your performance. Yeah. It's going to affect, you know, the staff that wants to work at your facility. Whereas at an airport, you know, we clearly are on a fortunate upswing of popularity of air travel, how convenient it is. Airlines do a fantastic job across the board, and it's been a really good wave for us to ride and follow.
Well, I'm a long-suffering Dolphins fan, so as you know, you and I talk offline a lot, so I know about those multiple seasons of the team not doing well and making it hard to root for them. But
do the Dolphins still have a franchise in Miami? I didn't
know that. Yes, they do. And thank you for asking about it, Dave. Thank you. Hey, listen, we just had a draft, and I think and we're looking good. At least that's what I say for the last however long Marino since retired. So what were some of the venues and types of events that you actually managed?
Well, I started my career, you know, like I said, in 1991. I was a volunteer parking attendant at the local live music outdoor amphitheater here in Indianapolis, just north of Indy, formerly called Deer Creek Music Center. And I was too young to get paid at the time. I was just barely 15. I'm an only child, and my mom and dad, my dad got transferred from Naperville, just outside of Chicago, to this area. And my freshman football coach was a security supervisor at this amphitheater. And, you know, here I am, coming into high school, a new kid, zero friends, only child. And man, this sounds like a cool thing. You know, our coach was asking if after practice he needed help to work at a concert. And I said, well, yeah, that sounds like fun. Sure. So I went to a payphone, because we didn't have cell phones, and called my mom. And yeah, and she was like, well, yeah, I guess so. If you're going with your coach, how bad can it be? And little did I know, it was the Grateful Dead concert in 1991, in August of 91. And I fell in love with the industry and fell in love with providing those, you know, experiences for people. And mind you, I literally sat on a light tower and watched a open field, making sure that people didn't walk across the field to relieve themselves in some woods. And that was my first job. But I quickly, you know, learned to appreciate what that job could bring. And I was an intern for a while, then I was a supervisor and a manager and whatnot. And then I ended up being the general manager of that venue. And then in 2003, I had the same boss throughout the entire time. And then in 03, in 2001, that boss got promoted and moved up to Chicago. And then in 2003, he asked me if I wanted to move up to Milwaukee and take over a venue as well as a promotions company. And I said, sure, I'd love to. I was dating somebody at the time. Does this mean that I'll be there in, you know, Milwaukee for a while? Cause I would like for her to move up, who's now my current wife. And he said, yeah, I think so. And so I said, okay. So I moved to just south of Milwaukee, called Oak Creek, Wisconsin, worked to get Angie, my wife, to move up there. And the move to Milwaukee from Chicago wasn't quite as appealing, so that didn't work out as well as what I thought it would. But fortunately, 9 months later, I got the call to move down to Chicago, which is a good thing, because I literally had not even unpacked. So packed up what I had not unpacked and moved down to Chicago, and then got Angie to move up. So moved to Chicago in 04 and managed multiple indoor and outdoor venues. House of Blues was one in Chicago. Wow. Managed three outdoor amphitheaters, two in Chicago, one up in East Troy, Wisconsin, close to Lake Geneva. And then throughout that time, took on other venues in the Midwest and Kansas City and Michigan and Indiana and Ohio and, you know, wow, a few other areas. And then kind of hit the same point that I hit a few years ago with family life and whatnot. My father got sick with lung cancer, and you know, we always wanted to get back to Indy. I'd gotten married in that time, and then we had our first child, and it was just time to get back to Indy. So we relocated back. There was an unfortunate opportunity for me to work at the Indiana State Fairgrounds as a result of a deadly stage collapse that happened in 2011. And they went through a state investigation that proved that they might need some operational help. So I took over as the chief operations officer at the Indiana State Fairgrounds. I was there for almost 2 years, but about halfway through that tenure, my friend who's the president of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway called me and asked me if I ever wanted to work at the track. And that was really my first love, was IndyCar racing. And mm-hmm. any event person, especially in the state of Indiana, that's, you know, to work at the track is kind of the end all be all, you know, dream job. And that's where we all want to end up. So I ended up moving over there, and that's what proved to be the proverbial, the long straw that broke the camel's back for me. There was a lot, and it was the 100th running of the race, which proved to be, I mean, it was the first time in the history that the world's single largest sporting event venue in the world had sold out. So we sold every ticket, we sold every campground, every parking spot. Along those lines, we also did what was called Project 100, which is the first major renovation at this 108-year-old facility. So it was a $100 million upgrade to the facility that was being done, you know, kind of along the same time. So did a lot of really great things. There was it's just a wonderful team there. But it was time for me to move on. And that's what brought me to the airport.
So I'm sure this is unlike the industry in which you had previously worked, but what about airports do you find personally unique and exciting?
You know, when I compare previous careers and, you know, the industry versus the current, there was so much pre-planning and pre-effort that went into what I used to do and what our team used to do. And there was so, in the grand scheme of things, there was so little opportunity to show those successes, meaning, you know, we would work really, there was one venue I had that we had six shows a year, and every show was sold out, and it was shows like the Dave Matthews Band and Jimmy Buffett and Fish and, you know, Coldplay and U2 and all these acts that sold 35,000 tickets a show. But, you know, we work year round at that venue to kind of show our stuff eight times a year. Whereas in an airport, you're on every day.
Yeah.
And you are our staff and our team and everybody associated with it. You know, we don't get the opportunity to screw up. And it's not that that was acceptable in the event industry, but, you know, you didn't have an opportunity to try anything. So if you wanted to unveil some large new concessions program or a new way to park cars or a new way to implement, you know, anything operationally, you learned real quick during that show that it worked or it didn't work, or that day of the state fair or the Indy 500, which happens once a year. In an airport, you get every day, but you don't get a chance to practice and to work it through. So that's been the biggest learning curve I would say for me, and largest opportunity is working at an airport. Is, you know, I always knew we had to get it right the first time, but I also knew that, you know what, if we didn't, then it was a good learning experience, and by God, we were going to nail it the next show. But you just don't have that luxury in an airport because obviously it's open every single day. A lot more eyes looking at it. Social media presence is unlike anything I think we ever expected, and God knows where that direction is going as far as the instantaneous feedback that you get from folks, which is, you know, a blessing and a curse in the same sense. But just the sense of having to be on every single day is both good and bad.
You don't think it's in some ways it's kind of similar? I mean, like, I don't know much about the previous industry, but I'm assuming if you have Phish, Coldplay, U2, I mean, those are different events, even though the venue is the same, I'm assuming, right? But I guess there must be some similarities that I got. That's what I'm trying to get at, that you probably took from your previous life to this one now.
Yeah, there absolutely are. It's the theory of providing excellent customer service. It's providing new and creative experiences for guests. It's all of the things that go into what making a good airport great. And that's one of the reasons why I've been told that I was an appealing candidate was because of those experiences that I have and dealing with the public and working in every sector of working with the public, whether it be answering the phones and dealing with customer service or dealing with agents and managers, dealing with a variety of contractors, union, non-union, all that kind of stuff. So those kinds of things carry over very much so. And then to take it a step further, here in Indy, we have tremendous partnerships with several local, whether it be sports organizations or news affiliates or radio stations or community groups. And I was fortunate enough to work with a lot of those in advance. So my transition, you know, from the outside world into airports was even that much smoother because anybody that would call that wanted to do business with the airport, whether it be a local company wanting to do advertising or an event or something like that, or the local Visit Indy, who's the local tourism group. I knew all those people already, and it made that transition, you know, very smooth.
I guess in some ways, your two lives, you know, they had the same level of complexity, but maybe they had different complexity, I guess, if that's fair to say.
Yeah, they do. Just a different breadth of responsibility. I was making life-saving decisions at other venues, and fortunately, I'm not in a position here at the airport to be making those choices. We'll leave those to the capable hands of our ops and public safety folks. Yeah, I mean, just the tension and the stress of getting it right due to how important the overall operation is here in Indy to our passengers and to our business partners and to our employees. I mean, that pressure is real, and we take it very seriously.
My next question, let's just assume now you've had a couple of years under your belt. Obviously, we're going to fast forward a little bit, but can you just share a specific event during your tenure that proved to be a point of learning that kind of made you realize just how truly different this industry is? And you might have already experienced it, but maybe something, or maybe you might have mentioned, I'm sorry, maybe, but could you just talk about something maybe a little more specific that got you to realize when you encountered it, oh, this is definitely different when I was handling tenant relations or tendering, you know, things like that.
Sure. Overall, I think whoever listens to this is, you know, in this industry, and I came to quickly realize, in my previous industries, I was trained, I was celebrated to make really, really quick decisions. And somebody said it to me when I first started, and it's probably not the most appropriate in this industry, but I was really good at shooting, aiming, and then getting ready. And in this industry, you need to talk to a lot of people before you even, you know, think about proceeding, and then you need to aim, and then you need to fire. And I learned really quickly that this industry, and rightfully so, as it should be, is very, very strategic, more complicated, more so than the event industry. And it's not that we didn't you know, think about things. And it's not that we didn't plan and strategize. It's just, you know, on the day of an event, if you get thrown a curveball, there's no time to get several people together and have meetings and have, you know, create working groups. You just need to act. When I first started, Jason Pulitzer, who works here at the airport, him and Eric Anderson and Marcia Stone is my boss. They were in progress with the concessions refresh program. And I knew approximately what I was getting myself into when I started here, but I never anticipated and could never predict that, you know, looking back, that we estimated we spent about 10,000 hours just between Jason and I, and then the various departments that worked on this. And, you know, even along the way, it was so much that we identified the need to hire another person. So we added headcount as well, a person named Mandy Royston, who's on our team now, and she's just a godsend. And, you know, and in all of the other solicitations for, quote, the concessions program, which is kind of a loose term, I know, in this industry, but I mean, I never ever would have imagined how much work and strategy and you know, just conversations and meetings and just general effort went into this refresh program. But then looking back on it, now that we've got almost all of our contracts awarded, construction has begun. It's going to last, you know, I can sit here and say 2.5 to 3 years. I think we would all agree it's probably going to be longer. We have this new amazing program that, you know, you can walk around the terminal right now, probably in any airport, anybody in my role, and say, yeah, there's 3 things wrong with this place, 2 things wrong. Yeah, we're going to get to that. You know, this place is not good because, and looking forward, when our program has rolled out, I don't think we're going to be able to say that on really any locations. And it's a true testament to the work and effort that was done well before I ever got here, working alongside consultants, working alongside partners, with the leadership of our board, with the leadership of our executive director, Mario Rodriguez. We've just made really intelligent, you know, really good decisions. And we wouldn't have gotten to that point unless we hadn't have put in all that work that, again, when I go back to your question, when I started, I just never ever would have thought that it would have taken that much, but it absolutely has taken that much and then that much more.
So you mentioned Marcia Stone, and my next question for you actually it was in regards to the mentors. I'm sure you've come across many during your time, during your brief time with the airport so far, but can you name a couple and what you might have learned from them?
Well, as you know, my number one mentor is Ramon Lowe.
Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome. I would say Brian Loden, but I wouldn't mean that. My mentors in this industry are, there's a couple people. First and foremost is Marcia Stone. I can't walk into a room, whether here in Indy or at a conference, without stopping, you know, a dozen times and taking 30 minutes to get from point A to point B, because she knows everybody in this industry. She's been at it for almost 25 years, held a variety of you know, high ranking important roles. And man, if I'm ever, I mean, it just happened last week. We were sitting in, you know, the office, stumped on something, and it's like, Jesus, the answer is so simple. What are we missing? What are we not thinking of? And we literally just walked down to Marcia, and I can't repeat what I said. I was like, yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's perfect. You're exactly right. So she's a great mentor. She's a friend first and foremost, but she's a tremendous manager and supervisor and absolutely a force to be reckoned with in this industry.
I see a podcast episode in her future, by the way. Go ahead.
she would, you would need longer than a half hour, but she would be great. Our director, Mario Rodriguez, is, you know, he labels himself as, you know, why should he know? He's only been in this industry for 30 years. And, I mean, that's something to be said, is you to grow up and to work in this industry at the level that he has worked at, and to experience the things that he has experienced, whether it be this little thing called Hurricane Katrina, that his stories are just like you just sit there with your mouth open, like, this is real. Like, this, you're not making this up. This really happened. So he brings a tremendous amount of enlightenment and experience to this place. And then the other mentors that I have are just the people who work at this amazing facility. Indianapolis is this market with an airport that it continues to win awards. And I can't go anywhere without people finding out that I work at the Indianapolis International Airport. And they're like, oh my gosh, it's the best airport. And people meet it. It's not like you meet somebody and you kind of make it up and it's just casual. Oh yeah, that's the best. No, people mean it. And I'm the first to give credit to where credit is due to the people that have come well before me, either who are still here or who folks have retired and moved on. There's so much work and effort and planning that went into this facility, both in design and construction, but then also the current maintenance and the current upkeep. Those people are my mentors. It's the people in this industry that we continue to do so well and win awards and be recognized. And then the creative things that we try and do, which are, outside of the box. Megan Carrico, who's our director of, manager of affairs and PR. But Megan just starts her day with a list of 9 things to do. She accomplishes 100 things, and she hasn't even touched the 9 things just because things come up and she's creative.
Yep, they do.
So it's a lot of the people that work here that are business partners, especially. I mean, I think you had Erin Humphreys on a little while ago. There's this, woman-owned business who, and if you meet Erin and spend 5 minutes with her, you're like, I just want to hang out with you all the time. Same thing with our Just Pop In Popcorn twins. And but all those people that don't accept the status quo, that are creative in this industry and put the passenger experience first. Those are the people that I appreciate and I always listen to very closely.
You know, that's why I particularly enjoy when new folks come into this industry, and it's not often because we are so specialized, right? Airports, that is, that when new folks such as yourself come in, it's a new set of eyes looking at something, and I'm sure you've in your time here, you've networked and met with a lot of your peers, and you've seen other airports and, gathered ideas. But like from your previous experiences, you're bringing those skills, that history, let's say, into the space to continue to evolve it. And I mean, you mentioned it. Indy has been an award-winning airport, both within the industry with Airport Experience News, that is, and also outside. So, and that kind of leads me to my next question is, I'm sure you have a proudest moment, even within the nearly 3 years you've been here, because it has to be exciting to be part of such change. Now, it's going to come on 15 years for me in this industry when I started with ARN. And I remember when the program came on the first time, and it was so fresh and it was so cool and unique, and it was a brand new airport, and it's still amazing, So please share, a proud moment that you kind of went through, whether it's through the tendering process, maybe explain what that was like, but anything else.
Sure. One of our proudest moments, I say our, because our team, was going through this concessions refresh program. And in January of this year, we split up the awarding of the, retail packages versus the food and beverage. I mean, we've got 54 total locations, 45 of them expired at the end of last year. So it took a long time for us to realize, but we needed to separate the retail versus the food and beverage just because of, it's such a huge bite of the apple that we're making, to combine those two programs, I guess, to present them to the board in one meeting just would have been too much. And the amount of information and the amount of data and detail was almost overwhelming. So we had split that up and we presented, 14 or 15 retail locations in the January meeting. And then we did the almost the balance of the food and beverage, package and program in the March meeting. And Marcia Stone presented the retail in January, and then I presented the food and beverage in March. But looking back to January, we had done our due diligence with the board in advance. You know, like I said, we've worked really hard and been extremely clear and transparent with our program. We've got great partnerships, both local and non-local. But for Marcia to present the retail program, and I've never seen somebody do as good of a job presenting something to a group of people as Marcia Stone, but to present the retail program and you know, as you know, and as we all know, you can't have everybody win. And there was an organization that came to the meeting and spoke, you know, asked the board to wait basically and to reevaluate our proposals and to, I guess, to our team's credit and to Marcia and Mario's credit and to our team's credit, the board absolutely heard them, but the board immediately approved the contracts. And it was nothing against the organization that didn't win, and they heard them, but the board and, you know, the organization had confidence in our program and the work that we had put in advance and all the community outreach that we did. And, you know, these 10,000 hours of literally blood, sweat, and tears to get to where we were. So to come in from where I started, which we didn't even have a solicitation document, like Jason Poulter and I kind of scheduled the meeting one time and like, hey, is there a draft of something or where do we start?
No, but there's
going to
be one now.
Yeah. Our solicitation document was 402 pages, inclusive of a, you know, a contract template, inclusive of the tenant improvement manual, and inclusive of all the drawings and the, you know, all that stuff. But none of that existed even 2 years prior. So 2 years prior to January. So to look back on, like when I first started, to not have any idea of what I was getting myself into and what we were, the road we were about to go down, and then looking back at it, sitting in that board meeting in January, and to have, you know, the board unanimously not only approve us, but just how that all whole thing unfolded was really a, of all of the cool things that I've done in my career, I've been yelled at by Diana Ross in a dressing room hallway. I have delivered a sailboat to Paul McCartney. I have went out and bought a treadmill for Mick Jagger. Of all these like cool, amazing experiences I have, sitting in that boardroom and to hear that support and for people to, you know, be so supportive of our team after that, that was a moment I will absolutely never, ever, ever forget.
Well, let's just say that, I mean, you got, the team did a really good job. So that's probably why it went off so well, because it's not always smooth, as you probably hear from others within the industry, you know?
Well, we knew that. And when, you know, when we saw who was in that meeting and we quickly learned and knew that they were going to speak, you know, the 2 years of work and, you know, conference calls with Marcia at 10:30 at night on a Wednesday because we didn't have time during the day to catch up. And, you know, all of that started to kind of play out. I was like, you know, where did we go wrong? What is going to happen? Do we start over? And I just kind of kept myself calm and put the faith in the work that this team, our procurement team, our legal team, our planning and development team, the health department, just everybody across the board, put all that faith and confidence in our system and our program, and it worked out.
You know, it's funny because, I think this is one of the reasons why people within this industry stay within the industry. You know, I've seen people move within companies, within airports, et cetera. And for an outside, you need a tremendous amount of resilience. You know, it is governmental, unlike maybe where the industry you had previously served in. So that things might tend to move slowly. There are many levels to cross or to break through. And a process like this, right out the gate, that you have to be a part of, especially one that you and Jason had to pretty much put together or start with. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's kind of like it's putting you through the paces to see if you're really worthy, if you have the stomach for it, basically.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And there, you know, we were confident in our process, and we had regular check-ins with Mario, who's, like mm-hmm. I said, been in this industry for 30 years and been there, done that. And same thing with Marcia. Well, she's only been here. She has seen and heard of everything. And if she hasn't, then she knows who to contact and who mm-hmm. to call. So we worked with consultants. I mean, I visited Portland in December, prior to our, you know, final board meetings to present the retail and food and beverage pack. I mean, there's just, that's how this industry works. And it's just so fascinating. It's so important and so helpful that, you know, I think we all probably dread getting those emails throughout the course of the day. And Ramon, I don't know if you get them or not, but I know you send them.
I hear about them.
Of, you know, please share. And, you know, all of us are probably like, oh God. But at the back of the, you know, at the end of the day, in your back of your head, you're like, but I need this information. And if I contribute to it, I hopefully will receive, you know, 30 different situations of how you pay Clear Channel, or how you do your advertising in the airport, or one of these other complex situations that we all face, and you know, TNC and mm-hmm. you know, the Uber impact, or parking, or just all that stuff. And that's what's so cool about this industry, is that everybody genuinely looks out for each other and really shares information.
Yeah, and I was gonna bring that up. I mean, you spoke about the internal structure, the internal family there at Indian that you kind of leaned on, like Marcia and Jason, et cetera. You're discovering, well, you have discovered now that you there's just a tremendous network, like you said, of people who are so willing, given the time, to share. I mean, it's different for you because you're in their seat as well, not just in their airport, but, you know, another airport. So you see what they see, or vice versa. Me, I'm usually up in the crow's nest looking down, and I'm always still amazed if I can call you or Liz Jacobiak or John Reeb, et cetera, others within the industry, mm-hmm. say, hey, I got a question mm-hmm. about this. Mm-hmm. And people are like really helpful with it, which is great.
Yeah. And there's, you know, I've always operated that way too. And our team has too. And you know, at the end of the day, what I've found is more and more people, either in my role or Jason's role or Marcia's or even Mario's role, you know, at the end of the day, you just really want to provide good service, and you really want to provide a great passenger experience, and you always want that to improve and evolve, because it's what the public deserves. I mean, Mario says it best. This is not our airport. This is your airport. Mm-hmm. This is the people's airport, and we have a responsibility to those passengers and to the public to provide the best, the highest quality of service, the best facility, the best experiences. And more often than not, that's what I'm seeing. And that's what I'm finding. I mean, when I went to visit Portland and Indy and a few other airports, but Portland and Indy tend to do extremely well when it comes to winning awards, which is wonderful. So I wanted to go to, I've never even been to Portland. So I wanted to go to Portland to learn. And
that's a great
and
team.
My friend Walt, I was sitting at lunch with a few members of the concessions team, and in a restaurant in Portland, you know, in the airport, and Walt comes like walking through pretty on a fast pace, and I was like, oh, some crap,
he's
something's
a machine.
Wrong, and yeah, and they're like, no, that's just what he does. I'm like,
yes.
What do you mean that's what he does? He goes, he just during the day he walks, you know, into every store, into every restaurant, into every, and I was like, gosh, what screams, you know, wanting to provide the best experience, then you are literally boots on the ground every single day. And that's the level of service that I find a lot of these people in this industry go after. And I can tell you from either running sports facilities or running other event venues, it's not always like that. It's much more profit driven, and much more, it's a lot about the X's and O's and not the Sally's and the Joe's, is what I've, a term that I've kind of coined. And in this industry, we genuinely care about passengers and care about our business partners and care about, you know, experiences and the public's image. And it's not always like that at other quote public assembly facilities.
You know, to touch back on the Walt thing, I have now Portland, we're both on the East Coast, you know, Portland is 3 hours behind, and I've sent Walt emails at 8 o'clock my time, which would be 5 in the morning his time, and I've gotten a proper response. I've done this several times.
He's an hour and a half in at that point.
Oh yeah. And I feel like I'm just getting in. I'm you know, like, I got to start the day. And Walt is probably like an hour three
already. Oh, yeah. He's clicked 4 miles of walking. Yeah, for sure.
Well, Dave, I have one more question for you, and I'll let you go. You touched upon what's left to do or what's left for the program. You said there's more opportunities coming up, I believe. You know, talk about what you're looking forward to.
We are so looking forward to construction, and I know it sounds kind of strange, but just we've worked so long and so hard, like I've said on this call, to get to where we're at, and now it's like I mean, I kind of compare it to now it's showtime. Like we've planned and we've had all these meetings and prep and all right, well now we've presented everything, so we've booked the show, we've announced the show. And now the show's about to start. And for us to get into the sweeping change that this facility will see, that this airport will see, is just so incredibly exciting. So that's what I'm most looking forward to. I mean, I can tell you that this Sun King tasting tap room that we have in V Concourse, which is a local Indiana brewery, I can tell you how popular it's going to be, but to walk down the concourse and to see people's reaction and to see people, you know, genuinely enjoying the space is what we are most excited about. We talk about it all the time in these planning meetings and construction meetings and just going through that process. I mean, this is the largest public facing project that this airport has ever seen, other than the terminal being built. To change out 45 retail and concession locations at basically at one time. I mean, we all know how much goes into that. We know about the jobs that we're creating in the local economy and community because of the construction. We know that the level of service and the level of offerings are only going to increase for our passengers. So I just can't wait to see how this whole thing plays out. And, it's going to be a long time coming. What, you know, like I said, we'll probably be 3 years in, I think, before it's all said and done. But man, we say it all the time. We just want to fast forward 3 years and see what this thing is going to look like and see how much our passengers and the public will love it.
Well, Dave, thanks for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you, Ramon. I appreciate you and I appreciate all the work that you and your team does. It's good stuff.